Hello and welcome to episode 23 of the Thundercast. On today's show, we are discussing anything and everything to do with E3 2013. I'm Matthew Sorry, and joining me today, I have the sultry tones of Shane Ryan.
Now then.
Okay, Shane, so let's kick things off by talking about the console manufacturer with arguably the most to lose at this year's E3, and that would be, of course, Microsoft. So after an extremely unclear message about the Xbox One's online requirements, they just yesterday clarified that the console isn't always on, but it does need online certification every 24 hours in order to keep working, or else you've just got a heap of a brick of plastic underneath your TV that doesn't really do very much. So that's obviously getting quite a lot of negative press now. How do you think that affects how Microsoft is going to approach this year's E3?
If we're talking about the recent news, as in we're recording this on Friday, so recent being last night, where basically they've clarified a bit more on what they mean. I think people are right in saying, as people on our forums have been saying, that this is just a case of them saying it now, so people explode in anger, and then in a couple of days' time, E3, everyone shits the pants at the amount of exclusive games are bringing out, and everyone gives up and just goes, oh, shit, I'll buy it anyway. That's what I think will happen.
Yeah, so they're getting the bad news out of the way.
Oh, definitely.
They can hit you with all the good news. Well, if that's the case, do you think that Sony is holding back some of the bad news?
Because this is a risk.
They enjoy the fact that Microsoft are getting
all
the bad press.
Because everyone's talking about Microsoft, whether it's good or bad. No one's talking about Sony for the past few weeks at all. All it is passing comments of, well, maybe Sony will do the same. And it's kind of, they've been so quiet. If you actually consider how quiet they've been.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is that Sony haven't clarified what their online requirements are.
No.
They've only alluded to it at their conference, but we don't know specifically whether they're going to have an always-on connection, whether they're going to have a very similar 24-hour certification process, whatever it is.
I don't think they will, but the trouble then comes into what will they do about used games? Because if this is going to be publisher-only and publishers want this, and they go to Microsoft where they can effectively, you know, they have a way of monitoring or controlling it, If Sony say, oh, actually, we don't have the technology to do that, they might just say, well, sod it, we're not doing it all.
Yeah,
because there was that painting that bounced around, wasn't there, that basically it reads a disc, and it can tell if it's been used before or if it's been installed before. There's like a Sony patent going about this, similar sort of thing.
So it doesn't need to be connected online to do that.
Yeah, it's like an offline DRM.
Yeah, it's inbuilt into the operating system.
Mm-hmm. Or some way it gets marked once it's linked to an account.
That's quite interesting.
The data on the disc changes or something bizarre like that. I don't know how it works if you're not writing back to the disc, but there's some way they do it. Again, they said that was just an idea and it was just a concept, but that's always a possibility. They've been very quiet. I mean, at the conference originally, they said that you'll just be able to play it out of the box and you don't need to connect it. But when they're saying that every single service they talked about at their conference was based around the internet, like this kind of it's hiatus where it's downloading stuff in the background and updates. Yeah. So it always needs an online connection.
It does sound like it's very integral. So I will be interested to see whether Sony actually come out in E3 and say, look, we have this feature as well. We should have told you earlier, maybe. But how do you think Microsoft are going to approach their E3 now? You're saying that you think they're getting all the bad news out of the way to begin with so they can hit you with an absolute waterfall of brilliant exclusive games. Do you really think that that's what it's going to be?
I mean, in their mind,
15, was it 15 launch exclusives?
15 exclusives in the first year, 8 are brand new.
Eight of which are new IPs.
They've said that they've spent $1 billion on games alone.
Now, just as they put their little finger to their mouth, Dr. Evil style.
If you actually think about that, that's way more than 15 games that they run studios for. This could be... Now, this is the rumours coming about that there's going to be a hell of a lot of games that are going to be six-month exclusive, like timed exclusive. So it could be stuff like Fallout 4 to Mirror's Edge 2. All these games will be 6 months on the Xbox first before it goes to PS4. And that costs hardly any of the cost of running an actual studio and a first-party title, to just walk up to like a company and say, look, bring out on ours first, and we'll give you this bit of money straight up to help out.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cheaper way of them securing inverted commas, exclusive content, and it's been proven in the past to work, to sell consoles.
And no one talks, I mean, Tomb Raider.
We're all impatient.
Everyone's gone about Tomb Raider being the best thing in the world. It's a month later, no one's even talking about it anymore, except for how it didn't sell that well or something.
So I think you are right.
In 6 months' time.
The initial launch window of a game is where it really gets its hype and where people are really interested, and that's where most of the sales occur. So if you get exclusive content, even if it's just timed exclusives, that will be really interesting. And I think you're right, this $1 billion that Microsoft are spending on game development and possibly securing exclusive content for games could really benefit them with the launch of the Xbox One.
And Sony haven't said anything similar, and that's probably why they're going the indie route, because it's cheaper. And they feel that could be a goodwill win to the hardcore market, whatever that means. That's the terms they kind of use. But with Microsoft, it's a case of, well, we don't need indie at launch. What we need to do is just basically get exclusive content for every single big title for the first year to make it a better version.
Do you think we're going to get some clarification on what Microsoft's approach is to the indie developers for this next generation with Xbox One?
You get a passing comment
at
E3.
Do you think?
Yeah, you get.
Do you not think they'll like we saw Sony bring up Jonathan Blow at the PlayStation 4 reveal conference? You don't think we'll see anything like that
unless it's an exclusive, and it's Minecraft 2, or it's Minecraft 1.5 or something. Apart from that, I don't think they'll bother.
No.
Because Jonathan Blow, like, the whole thing was, it was kind of an industry, kind of a nudge, look, we've got this guy. But to anyone else, you know, the 95% of other people that should play video games, that meant nothing. It was an insider thing.
He's not the mass market.
No.
He is a very, well, not very niche market, but a relatively niche market.
I'd say it is niche, to be fair.
Yeah.
On the grander scale.
But especially compared to the market that Microsoft are clearly after, having seen their reveal conference.
Yeah.
They're clearly after the widest possible audience, although they're restricting their audience somewhat by making their console require an internet connection.
Yes.
So, I think you're right. I don't think we'll necessarily see Microsoft pushing towards the indie developers, making their platform easy to develop for indie developers as much as we're going to see Sony make their platform. Like, we've already heard so much about how Sony's platform is going to be predominantly a games console.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be easy to develop for. It's going to be easy to publish your games. I believe that we heard that Microsoft are still, they're not allowing independent developers to self-publish. They still have a very rigorous and possibly annoying to indie developers certification process for games to actually get on Xbox Live.
But they had, the thing is, they had the Xbox Live Indie Arcade where you could just publish anything. So that seems completely different to what Sony means by publish anything.
But I believe they're getting rid of that.
Isn't there? Oh, no, Xbox, so Microsoft are getting rid of that indie arcade space just because it came clogged up with loads of stuff. But when Sony say anyone can publish, they don't mean that in the way that, well, from what I understand, they don't mean that in the way that Microsoft meant it when anyone could publish anything to the indie space.
Yeah.
Because the games on Sony that come out, they're not... The more of the stuff you get on Steam rather than just somebody quickly making a game, sticking zombies in it, off it goes.
Yeah, that's true,
From what I've seen.
Yeah. So we'll see Microsoft push big in terms of the games they're going to get. They have the big blockbuster action titles. I think we'll see lots of
them. Yeah,
there
was a list bouncing around, wasn't there? It's supposed to be a fake list, but it seems pretty accurate. I couldn't find it.
I believe that Beyond Good and Evil 2 was on there as some form of exclusive.
That's been rumoured a lot in the past as well, hasn't it?
Which raised my eyebrow somewhat. I can't see that being an exclusive that Microsoft would go out and pay for. It wouldn't make much financial sense. And as we know, Microsoft is a company and they want to make more profit. And lots of their decisions are driven by that.
But wouldn't it be like the Cameo launch title? It'd be the platform or the cutesy one. Would that not be the only time to do it?
It's not so much of a platformer, though.
I know, but they can market in the same sort of colourful way, can't they? It's how it looks.
Yeah, I mean, I would have thought that they would have a Rare-style game there. Maybe it's a new Banjo-Kazooie, maybe it's a new Cameo, whatever.
Killer Instinct.
That's the kid-friendly launch title.
Mm-hmm. The success of Mortal Kombat, they thought, right, we can do this, get Killer Instinct back out.
Yeah, that would be pretty interesting. How varied do you think their launch lineup is going to be then? If we don't believe that they're going to have this real big push for indies the same as Sony,
I really don't know. I mean, how very is either of them going to be? There's going to be a lot of first-person shooters and racing games that are really dull but look nice. That's what's pretty much going to happen.
That's true. I think we'll see lots of that. We'll see them cover the spectrum of genres in terms of the big genres. So you'll see a bunch of third-person shooters, first-person shooters, and then racing games, sports games, car porn, which is kind of a subgenre of racing games. And then family-friendly games, and I think we'll get lots of games that are current-gen, so Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3, and also next-gen, with slightly more enhanced graphics.
What do you think the big 360 announcement's going to be? I think it's going to be the new version of the console.
The big 360? Well, that's an interesting point, we might not see them focus entirely on Xbox One. I think you're right, I think it makes sense, especially with a lack of backwards compatibility, for Microsoft to announce that they're going to come out with a very cheap version of the Xbox 360.
Yeah, I think it's
going to
be like a £100 or less version.
Yeah, kind of like the red Canadian Wii version of the Wii.
So basically you'll just play games and do your Netflix and your streaming and your apps and stuff.
Yeah, simple stuff. And it makes perfect business sense because the console has a huge library of titles. There's such a vast array of things you can play on it, and still you can do lots of things you're going to be able to do on your Xbox One, on your Xbox 360, like all of those streaming services, Netflix and things like that.
Yeah, they're not exactly going to look better. Still going to be the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. You just won't be able to wave your hands at them.
Just name your film. Although you can do that, the current Kinect, I guess. Never tried it.
Yeah, same here. Never tried it. So, Kinect as well, obviously, is going to be very interesting. How many of Microsoft's exclusive titles do you think will use Kinect?
Two.
Right, I'm going to go out on a limb and say four.
That's a considerable amount.
Yeah,
it's dangerous territory.
Quite a lot. Okay, let's qualify this. I think we're going to see a lot of games with minor Kinect implementation.
There'll be loads of that knocking about.
Lots and lots of games with minor Kinect implementation. Look, you can expand your fists and take apart your gun and twist it round, and it's absolutely pointless, but you can do it, which
looks good
awesome.
At presentation, but no one ever does it. Yeah.
And do you think we're finally going to actually see them come on stage and show us the bottom of an avatar's shoe without messing it up?
I don't know. What are the games do you think they're going to be then?
Well, excuse me.
I think it's going to be that Rise...
Yeah, I think Rise will be a Kinect title. I think we'll see something
that Roman one. I think Crytek are supposed to be doing
Rise.
That,
yeah, that's Crytek. They're doing that.
Play as the dog or whatever.
I think we'll see one or possibly two games from Rare and something else that I'm not sure of. I think we'll see something else that really, really like deeply utilizes the Kinect. Can't be played without the Kinect.
Yeah.
It's probably family friendly.
I don't know.
And I think we'll see dance games as well. Quite a lot.
Yes.
Of dance.
I'm wondering what the family friendly game will be because. I guess the Wii isn't around anymore, you see, and Nintendo have left that market behind and kind of forgotten it.
You say that, and we're going to come on to Nintendo later, but I think the announcement of all the new Mario games and...
No, but I mean the kind of the advertising angle of what people got, you know, you can bowl, you can do this, that ease of play, like people like the Wii because you didn't have a controller...
That's true. Nothing has quite replaced the Wii yet, so... People are maybe looking for the next Wii-like experience.
Kinect Fit and, 7.
Kinect Fit 7. Yeah, you can do
scrap the first six
squat thrust and things. Brilliant. Next gen.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll see Microsoft try and push for that Wii-like audience. In the sense that there's nothing that's really taken up the mantle of what the Wii did. The Wii U hasn't.
Yeah.
And they haven't come out like obviously Wii Sports was a huge like. Party game and really took off, and everyone was playing Wii Sports. Your dog was playing Wii Sports. Babies were playing Wii Sports.
People play it.
Old age pension homes were playing Wii Sports. People do still play it. Like my parents play it every now and then when they come round.
How many years has that game been going now then? 6, 7, 8?
yeah, a long time.
I can't think of any other game that still gets played like that.
Yeah.
It's lasted.
It's very popular, and nothing's really come up and taken that mantle. So if Microsoft can show something for the Kinect that can do something similar, then I think they'll be onto a winner. I mean, Kinect Sports were big sellers, weren't they?
Yep.
But I don't think that maybe they took off in the same way that Wii Sports did. So it'll be interesting to see if Microsoft try and push for that family-friendly. You think it'll be limited?
Yeah, for E3 especially, because I really think that they know that if they just come out and just do Kinect stuff like that, people just be like, oh, no. And it's their last chance, this, isn't it, to prove to people that are going to pay £400 to £500 for a machine on day one. They need to come out and prove it.
And from what they've said, the reason why they mainly talked about TV and sports and all the awesome features of Kinect in their announcement conference was so that they could concentrate on games at E3. And I think you're right in the sense that they got lots of the, inverted commas, bad news out of the way, because it's not bad news, it's just not news directed at us, who are mainly interested in games. So they got all of that out of the way before E3, so E3 they can really focus on what kind of video game content they're going to have on the system.
Yeah, because they've got that Titan. Is it called Titan? The new one by Respawn Development, which is basically the people that made Call of Duty 4, what it was. Yeah.
Yeah, that's timed Xbox exclusive. But it's kind of Microsoft exclusive, isn't it? Because I've read it's on PC as well.
It's timed exclusive. I just don't think they've done the PS4 one. And apparently, it is going to use the cloud computing. It's going to be online only. And the cloud computing is going to do additional AI and physics calculations.
Whoa, how's that going to work? Because I've read that it's on PC and 360 as well. So is that going to work on 360?
The 360 one is being done by a different developer and will probably be scaled down a lot.
Okay, so the 360 one is going to be
a third-party port.
Right, okay.
But the Xbox One is going to use that cloud stuff for extra things somehow.
Yeah. So in terms of Microsoft, let's sum up. I think it's fairly safe to say you're going to see a big push towards big blockbuster titles, push towards Kinect maybe on the family-friendly side of things and the dance side of things and party games and sports games and things like that, because that's what's really worked for them this generation with the current iteration of Kinect. And a big push as well for lots of exclusive, maybe timed exclusive content from third party publishers.
I think the word exclusive and exclusivity is going to get bounced around willy nilly at that conference by Microsoft.
And Experience.
Yeah.
And Game of Thrones. And awesome.
And Remedy, the new Remedy game I'm interested in. Which is a shame because the more I hear about the new Microsoft console, the more it really annoys me, and I wish I could just blend the two, you know, the PS4 mentality with the Xbox One pad.
Yeah.
Because the DualShock pad is just crap, and that's the one thing that really puts me off.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that Sony didn't take the plunge and actually just change their DualShock to look like a 360 pad.
If they just put the analog sticks where they're supposed to be, then I would have been straight in there. But I just thought, oh, for God's sake, you're just being stubborn. For the sake of being stubborn now.
It would have sold it for me if they'd actually just put out a GameCube controller.
How many shoulder buttons did that have? Three.
Yeah, it did, yeah.
Yeah. One down. Next gen, this. He needs five shoulder buttons now.
That is true next gen, getting rid of shoulder buttons. Cool. Okay, so let's put an estimate on the price of the Xbox One. How much do you think it's going to be?
£399.99.
Brilliant. I'm going to go £459.99.
Okay.
Cool.
I think you're wrong, but okay.
Cool. So do I, kind of. That's what I'm doing. All right. So let's move on to Sony then.
Okay.
So Sony announced the PlayStation 4 quite a long time ago now. It's back in February, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's ages.
Yeah, so it feels like a long time ago, and they haven't really talked that much about it since then. Obviously, Sony didn't quite focus on the kind of extra services that the PS4 is going to have, like TV and things like that. They're mainly focused on games and the hardware, and it was a much more well-received press conference, I would say, within the games media, because obviously they're focused on.
But the reach was a lot smaller.
Yes,
which is why the Xbox One has apparently had more pre-orders already than the PS4 has had in its complete lifetime since its announcement.
Yeah, yeah. So PS4 is seeming like the most popular console at the moment.
On the internet, in words, but financially, with pre-orders, it's nowhere near.
Is it not? Xbox One is being pre-ordered more than PS4, yep. Is it?
That's what I was reading. It's on an MVC and other stuff saying that, retailers have been saying that since the Xbox One had been announced, within like a couple of days, it had already been pre-ordered more than the PS4 had since February in total, which is huge.
That is interesting. I think that really shows how Microsoft's strategy has paid off with the
Call of Duty
audience.
Call of Duty, Madden, FIFA. And I mean, people think I'm taking a piss when I say it, but really, that is 90% of the market. Right there. And the rest of the internet can get stuffed as far as they're concerned, because that's where the money is.
as far as the businessmen are concerned, yep. Who gives a shit?
Exactly.
Cool. So what are your predictions for Sony's conference? Do you think they're going to come out and say, look, we're sorry, guys, we're actually have required internet connection as
they're
well?
They're going to be in a... Microsoft has said it all now. Yeah. Now, they've also cancelled... it appears that they've either cancelled all or the vast majority of one-to-one interviews and roundtables. Microsoft.
Microsoft, yeah. Yes, they have, yeah.
Which, again, might suggest that's because they just want to get all the games out there and flood the media with that and not talk about any of the bad stuff.
Yeah, because obviously if they have interviews, they're going to be questioned about the internet connection requirements.
Exactly, and they can wait. And I think it's just PR have just gone, look, you know, reason big companies don't say anything is when people say nothing, you can't write stories about it.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
what they did. Yeah. What EA did with SimCity. When it was fucked, they just shut up. And after a while, it's like, right, we can't write any more stories about
ignore
how broke it. Yeah.
Ignore it and it'll go away.
The journalists can't write
works.
Anything about it because there's nothing to write about because they've already said it's broke, so tough luck. And yeah. I think that's the same tactic they're using here, but then the internet will just explode with the games. And with Sony, now, instead, they're going to get all the questions and they haven't had this sort of interrogation. Now, generally, journalists seem a bit nicer to them because, you know, they come across as a bit more charming, especially the guy whose name I can't remember who did the interviews after the Sony conference. And he just seemed like a nice guy who generally kind of understood what they wanted to do and talked about the philosophy of it and just seemed a bit cheeky about it as well. Yeah.
Sony had a real good move when they got Mark Cerny out there to talk about the architecture and the games on PS4 because he is a game developer, not necessarily a corporate executive, a businessman.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy who, first and foremost, is interested in making games and making a great platform for games. So I would really like it, and I think they will, get Mark Cerny out there again, hopefully, to talk more about the console. I think that's a wise decision. I think
75-minute talk
see
about RAM.
Yeah.
just to get the internet going, oh my God, RAM!
The audience that's there for E3 will lap that up.
Yeah.
Which makes sense.
Check out this texture.
Super high res. Okay, so what else do you think we're going to see at Sony's press conference? Do you think we're going to see dry ice spilling out over this podium at the front of the conference as everyone shuffles into the conference hall and then Kaz Hirai flies down from the ceiling with angelic wings sprouted out of his back and then unveils the PS4 from underneath a cloak on this podium?
He lands.
Do you think it's going to be something like
that? They unveil the PS4, he kicks it over, stamps on it, and then they unveil the PlayStation 5 and say, this is true next gen. And then they run with that.
Screw next gen, we're all about next gen.
Yeah, we're already there. That'd be brilliant, actually.
Cool. So that's a genuine Thunderbolt prediction. Mm-hmm. That's what we think is going to happen.
And the S in PlayStation will be a 5 because of that. It's dead hip.
No, I think they're going to shape it like PlayStation 3's font was basically the Spider-Man font. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to shape the S like the Superman S because Superman's coming out next week, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the week after.
Yeah,
Man
soon.
Of Steel.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think they're going to jump on that bandwagon.
Don't they all look like a black box and it'll probably have a little thin blue bar of light on it somewhere?
Yeah, and it'll be super cool.
And it'll be shiny rather than matte.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that being the case. Shiny instead of matte. They'll probably go for shiny, which is cool. I'd rather have matte because...
But more interestingly,
cleaner.
The games. Now, this is a thing where I really don't know what's going to happen because what they showed at their presentation was essentially what Microsoft did, which is all pre-rendered footage for the most part, but then showed a bit of Killzone.
Well, no, that's true.
Apart from Killzone, the rest was all...
I don't know if...
Infamous was nothing. That was a trailer that had no in-game footage in it.
No, I don't know. I thought that was in-game footage.
Well, in-engine, in theory, that doesn't mean anything, because you could do anything, can't you?
You can manipulate it, it's not true depiction.
So I don't know what they're going to show, because they've already shown 4 or 5 of their games. So unless they come out of that all being playable, and then they need to show more stuff now.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, they've already done the impressive physics demonstration where they drop thousands and thousands of balls onto a stupid environment that has nothing to do with an actual game. So I think they've got nothing. I think that's it. They're spent.
Is that it?
That's
same Killzone.
That was it. No, I think we're going to see lots of announcements. I think we'll see Uncharted 4, and that will probably be their... Yeah, I think we'll at least see it, because Naughty Dog is a two-team studio, and The Last of Us is done. What's that second team working on? It's got to be PS4. Naughty Dog came out recently.
No, do you not reckon they're in a position where they could do a new IP and people would get really excited about it?
I think they are, yeah, but I think... having done The Last of Us, I think they'll go back to Uncharted. I think Sony wants them to go back to Uncharted because that was such a banner franchise for the PS3. Mm-hmm. It really was one of its flagship. Look, this is an exclusive title. Look how amazing it looks on the console. You can't do this on Xbox 360. Woohoo, we're great, buy our console. So I think we'll see Uncharted 4. I don't think it will be a launch title, but I think it will be somewhere early in the console's life cycle.
Mm-hmm. Do you think they'll have any unannounced exclusives?
Yes, I think they will. I can't think of any off the top of my head.
Yeah.
But yes, I don't think Nintendo will, but I think both Microsoft and Sony probably will have a few unannounced exclusive, maybe new IPs at some of their
studios. Yeah, I think Microsoft will have more, but it's just because they haven't given us anything, which is why they're making, Microsoft are making this big gamble now that they're just going to, it appears they're just going to pour out all these games. Then if they just come out and say, here's three games, everyone's going to be like, oh, for fuck's sake. Where Sony have already shown us, that they have got games in production.
Some of them are
running. You can actually play them. Killzone was playable at that time, which is a big difference because I think, Sony are ahead on this machine and Microsoft are obviously playing catch-up here.
What about Capcom's Deep Down that they showcased at the Sony conference? Do you think that might be a Sony exclusive, PlayStation exclusive?
Yeah, I think so, but it didn't look very interesting. It didn't even look real. That looked pre-rendered.
That's true. I don't know. I think that didn't look outside of the realms of possibility.
Oh, no, just the camera angles. It's either unplayable or it was pre-rendered.
Yeah, see, the thing is, I think you're right. I think lots of these things, they aren't actual in-game experiences, but I think they might have been built on the actual engines that the next-gen game's going to be built
on. Yeah, graphically, definitely believable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Especially in Japanese games, there's a habit of they lock everything down, so when there's a dragon and everything looks impressive, the reality is you can't even touch or interact with the environment. Everything just looks pretty, but there's not a lot of physics, if that makes sense. It's just like art and scenery.
They've spent all of the processing power on making something look extremely pretty, but when you bring all of the interactions and the physics and everything into it, they have to downgrade how the game actually looks.
Yeah.
It's like, is it David Cage, the guy who made Heavy Rain?
Uh-huh.
It's like his demonstration of old creepy man
face.
Oh, God,
that's pretentious wobble.
Did you not get emotional, Shane? Did you not cry a bit?
Hey. An emotional game, Deadly Premonition, and graphics are shite. So that was absolute proof that David Cage is just talking nonsense.
I mean, I've read countless articles about how...
He just wants to be a film director and he isn't.
Quite emotions. Of course he does, and that's obvious to everyone who plays video games. Proteus was an emotional game. Journey was probably the most emotional game, and I mean that in the sense that we often talk about games being emotional. Something like Call of Duty is emotional. It makes me feel anger and whatever, bloodlust, all those ridiculous things. But something like Journey was emotional in the sense that it made me feel sad, which is an emotion we don't feel very often in video games.
You have to feel a sense of attachment, don't you? Which is difficult.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, so I don't think creepy old man face is necessarily the way to go with that, but I think it's an interesting avenue for him to go down, so I think we might see David Cage's next project.
He's just finished that Beyond
Two Souls. I think that's pretty much finished up now. It's coming out soon. This is the thing with Sony's internal studios. You have Naughty Dog, who are finishing up The Last of Us. You have Quantic Dream, who are finishing up that. You have Santa Monica, who put out The Last God of War. So I think we might see something
A good thing for Sony is they've definitely finished this generation on a we still actually give a shit internally mode.
Yeah.
Where they're still releasing, high profile. The Last of Us has just got rave scores. I don't own a PS3, but I really want to play it because, the flaws of the game seem to be the video game parts, which is a common trait at the moment. And it's also, I still want to play this Beyond Two Souls as well, just because, it probably is just going to be an interactive game where you press X and circle. But it's an attempt to do something at least. It'll probably fail, but I want to at least see what it's like. And with Microsoft, it's just I don't even play games on my 360 anymore. I just use it for Netflix and the film.
That's the same here. That's kind of what my Xbox has turned into since I got a PC. I play all the games that come out on multi-platform on PC. And then the few PS3 exclusives that interest me. And I think Sony really does have a stronger set of first-party developers that they can lean on in this next generation.
Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft are going to have to go out there, maybe acquire studios or really push their studios that they've currently got to show something new.
I think they're just going to... I think Sony's going to go down the route of, we've got developers. Microsoft is going to say, well, everyone that you don't own, we're going to pay them to give us 3 to 6 months, you know, launch window. Exclusive one. And I think that's going to be the battle of people's patience, basically. And unfortunately, in the video game world, no one has any patience.
This is true. This is true. I think also, just coming back to a point we talked about with Microsoft in terms of how they're going to court indie developers, I think we're going to see Sony make a much more concerted effort to show, look, our platform is easy to develop for, and it's easy for you to self-publish your games on our platform.
There's got to be an indie montage. The better bit.
Oh, yeah.
The Rocky IV soundtrack or something. That's what I want.
Brilliant. There's another genuine Thunderbolt prediction. Indie montage to the Rocky IV soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we'll see a bigger push for independent developers. And that interests me more personally. But I can see the financial sense in the decisions that I think Microsoft are going to make.
Yep.
So, let's try and put a price point on the PS4. Do you think it will be cheaper or more expensive than the Xbox One? Higher or lower?
The same.
You think it's going to be $399.99?
Yep.
I'm going to go $359.99.
£100 less.
I'm only saying these because I actually think it's going to be $399.99, but I want to say something different to you.
When do you think they're going to come out? I think the PS4 even, because it's, I think Sony are ahead in production and actually knowing what they're doing.
Yeah.
I think there might be a week before, in maybe beginning of November. I mean, the new Xbox has got to come out on the Call of Duty Day, globally.
Yeah.
That's what they've got to be aiming for, surely.
Content.
Yes, it will be, won't
it? Probably right.
It's got to be.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good prediction.
So, but I think Sony will try and get in a week before that.
I think Sony was so stung by how late the PS3 was, but by how it really impacted the sales of the PS3 mm-hmm. and the popularity of the PS3 by the fact that Xbox 360 came out earlier.
Definitely, the uphill battle.
It does make a big difference. A console coming out earlier, they become established quicker and they become the console that your friends are playing, so mm-hmm. therefore the one that you're more likely to adopt. And I don't think Sony won that uphill struggle this generation, so I think, yes, you're right. I think they will have really focused on getting things to factory, getting things ready for an early date. I'm going to go with mid-November.
That's when COD's coming out, isn't it?
No, I'm going to go with late October.
Like the last possible release date of October.
Yeah.
I don't know when it'll be. It'd be like a Tuesday. Probably a Tuesday, wouldn't it? So then it can try and get higher sales for the week.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause it'd
be I don't know.
You know when people release stuff a couple of days early, so then it gets like a 10-day first week sales run.
Yes.
Yeah, for it looked like it sold more. So
they can boast about their figures, share prices go up. Woo, everyone wins.
It's the usual thing. Like cinemas do it all the time, or films do it all the time.
Yeah.
Well, how's to see with these two? I really think that, I mean, Sony, if you think about the fact that they've both sold pretty much the same consoles, the PS3 and 360 have sold the same, but the 360 came out first.
Yeah.
So, Sony's done really well, but then it also has the established fan base. Now, what Sony has, especially in Europe and the UK, is a lot of people, you know, since PlayStation 1, have always kind of stuck with Sony, and the PlayStation 2 was huge in the UK.
The 1 and 2 were massive in Europe.
And Microsoft has definitely made a big dent in that. And so that's why my only concern with Sony release date is if they do the usual of releasing late in Europe, and that will really affect them. Because if they miss the window, and for some reason like they did before, release it like in January or February after Christmas,
mm-hmm.
Microsoft could have 2 months with Call of Duty and the new FIFA. And it's just going to mop up a massive chunk of time there.
Yeah. I really think Sony will have made a concerted effort to get things out on time and get a worldwide release,
mm-hmm.
day and date, uniform across the world.
They've never done that before, though.
Yeah, that is true.
But that's the only thing they have a bad track record for.
That is true, but I think they will make the effort for it this generation. I think it makes sense.
Now, okay, a quick question. What do you think most people would do if that happened in Europe? If the Xbox came out on Call of Duty Day and everyone said this is the best version and the PS4 wasn't going to be out until February, March.
You see, the thing is, the PS4 is still going to have Call of Duty, isn't it? Day one?
Well, it won't be out yet, will it?
What do you mean? Oh, right. Oh, when the PS4 first comes out. Yes, you are right. No. So if this is the hypothetical possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah, the hypothetical that PS4 releases before the Xbox One.
Oh, no, sorry, afterwards. So Xbox One comes out in November with Call of Duty bundled in or something on release day, and the PS4 then isn't out until after Christmas, like in PS4 isn't out until February.
Well, I think that would be very harmful, especially to European sales. Call of Duty and all of the sports franchises are such a big part of the market that I think if Microsoft came out first and said, hey, look, we have these on our system, next-gen system, the only one available right now, come and get it, I think that will affect Sony, and I think it will affect the sales of the PS4 in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Especially because FIFA is huge over here.
Yes.
It's a massive system
sell. Big franchise. Mm-hmm. FIFA and COD.
So it all depends what the marketing's like for the next FIFA game. It should be interesting to see.
It does, and it will. I imagine it will be pre-rendered.
Oh, I mean, like the console then, because the Call of Duty one that was on when the football was on, that just said Xbox One at the end. It didn't mention any other console at all.
Well, who does FIFA advertise with at the moment? Is it?
I think it's mixed, isn't it?
Or is it both?
I'm not too sure.
No one's paid for the exclusivity. In terms of UK sales, I think paying for that exclusivity would be a big thing.
Yeah. Well, they've got Microsoft already said that they've got exclusive Ultimate Team content for FIFA. Now, the reality is that'll probably be next to nothing. But on the advertisement posters and on the boxes, if it says exclusive content on Xbox One, you know, that's why they do it, just so they can have those words.
Exactly, and that means things to people. Your average consumer going in, why would they buy the edition without the exclusive content?
Exactly.
Why? Doesn't make any sense. They don't care about which one might have slightly better graphics, slightly more polygons on the screen. What does that matter? It's the exclusive content they're after.
And you're not going to even notice much of a difference in graphics for the first few years anyway. It would be like it is this gen, where it's like in the last year or two, you'll see the first party PS4 titles push ahead.
Yeah. Okay, so there are predictions for Sony and Microsoft at this year's E3. We'll take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll talk about Nintendo and third-party publishers. Alright, welcome back. So let's talk about the third big console manufacturer, Nintendo. Now obviously Nintendo have announced that they're not going to have a big press conference like they normally have this year at E3. They're instead going to make their announcements through a series of Nintendo Directs, which will be streamable online. So do you think that is a wise move for Nintendo to make for this year's E3, Shane?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And why?
Following what we've just talked about before, it's clearly going to be Microsoft and Sony just walking around just saying who's got the biggest one and just getting it out on stage. So for Nintendo to spend all the money and time trying to wave theirs about, it'll just get a bit too messy. So then
this is true. Like, Nintendo's isn't as big as Microsoft and Sony's in this race.
No.
But it might be able to take them, take them from behind or something. They might be able to surprise them with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Nintendo is the underdog at this year's E3 in the sense that no one's really expecting that much of them. Yeah, we're expecting a new Mario, maybe a new Zelda, maybe a new Metroid. We don't really know, but we're expecting them to come out with a few of their own franchises and then maybe talk about a fairly weak lineup of third-party software. So I think Nintendo have got everything to win at this year's E3.
They have nothing to lose, and if they just come out and say, look, we released the console a year early, here's the games. You know, we've extended the launch window by 17 more months. Here's the games we should have released.
You know how there haven't been any games so far? Well, it's because we saved them all till now.
Yep.
And these are all the games. Look at them.
Here's your reward.
So that would be cool. I mean, I've bought a Wii U. Have you bought one, Shane?
No. I was tempted until I played Zombie U at Play Expo in about October last year, and I wasn't convinced on the pad, and the double screen was a gimmick. And so when I did that, I thought, I'm going to hold out for a bit. Because, I mean, I love the GameCube, and I think some of the games, I mean, the remake of Resident Evil, which is absolutely spectacular, was on that, and, you know, Time Splitters 4 player. But Nintendo, for me, has always been I think I'm getting too old for it now, and I don't mean that in their games, I mean in the way their systems usually are based, and this is what also doesn't work on the Wii U, is with the Wii and the SNES and... the GameCube is very local multiplayer situations. Look, 2 to 4 people sat around. I mean, we'd play Time Splitters every day, all night. GoldenEye spent whole summers at high school when I wasn't playing Dungeons & Dragons, just sat indoors when the sun's out, around a little 14-inch CRT TV playing stupid rules of, like, two lives, one shot kill. I think it's you only live twice, and then you put your health down to 100%. And loads of stuff like that. And then the Wii U, you've got one controller, and it just totally eliminates that. How would you do WarioWare in that situation when you possibly... I mean, you could pass the one thing around, but it just doesn't... It's not the same.
Well, they are doing WarioWare, aren't they? And I think they're going to have lots of that. I think they're going to have lots of asynchronous multiplayer, and obviously... lots of, like you say, the Wii U gamepad, you said it's a gimmick. I'm inclined to agree with you based upon what I've played so far. I haven't seen any software from Nintendo that really made me go, yeah, this is why this gamepad is a good idea. This is what makes it good for gaming.
And the main reason for that is, and some people might be listening thinking, oh, well, there is, because, you know, on Zombie U, you have to look down into your backpack. It's more realistic because you can't look at the screen. But... You can only look. You're not an Apache helicopter pilot. You can only look at one place at one time. So you're only looking at one screen. So it makes no difference.
Yeah.
You're still looking at one single screen. So therefore, that one single screen can still be displayed on the main screen.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not worth.
They could do like a boxed window. Yeah. I mean,
it doesn't make a big enough difference. It doesn't. And also, it's a first-person game, but when you look up, you can see a third-person image of yourself, which breaks the fourth wall if you're talking about immersion anyway. So that's actually a step backwards. So I've not seen anything, like you said, that you just think, oh, no, you could not do this with that second screen.
Definitely. I think... I just can't imagine what they can do with their first-party software, what they can do with Zelda, Mario, Metroid, that's really going to make us think, this is really cool. This second screen really adds to the immersion, adds to the game, adds to the experience, whatever it is.
The only thing I'll say for Zombie U is the multiplayer that actually does that. But again, like I said before, it's limiting because you only have one Wii U gamepad, really, and that's where, you know, it's almost like a dungeon master and someone messes about with the level as you go through. And that's a neat sort of idea. But you're limited because you're not going to buy four of those on like WarioWare where you can start mucking about with the main screen as people are doing stuff.
Yeah.
It doesn't
four of those don't work. You can only have two connected to the console at any one time. So I think Nintendo at this year's E3, I think they really need to talk about something that really utilizes the gamepad for a gaming experience. I mean, because Pikmin doesn't. I mean, you can play Pikmin without the gamepad. The gamepad will display the map, but like you just said, Shane, it's an effort to look between the screen and that gamepad. It doesn't make it any better because I've got the HUD or the map or whatever it is, the mini-map,
in my lap. You can only look at one screen, so you don't have to press a button and bring the map up.
I genuinely find it annoying. I find it distracting. It doesn't really help. So I think we need to see some stuff from Nintendo that really shows why it's a good thing. I don't think that stuff should come from their first-party software. I don't think there's any point in shoehorning Mario into the gamepad. I mean, yeah, fair enough. Maybe you can add some minor features that utilize the gamepad that add to it. But I don't think there's anything game-changing they can do with the gamepad. But who knows? Nintendo, prove me wrong. Show me something that blows my socks off.
Mm-hmm. But at first I thought, no, they've got to have games that they've planned based around this. That's why they've done it. But now I just think they thought tablets were getting popular, so they did it.
Yeah, it kind of seems like that, doesn't it?
Which is the backwards, because you're normally Nintendo lead, you know, they're the ones that pushed having buttons on the back and shoulder buttons on the SNES pad. And, you know, if you look back at the controllers, they do something weird and wacky, but something always... All the other companies next gen ripped something off that pad, you know. The N64 pad where you almost had the two dual sticks, but, you know, you had the kind of buttons on one side that slowly morphed into, you know, the dual stick controller and stuff like that. And, now they've just done something. And all the other companies have gone, well, we'll just let you use the app on your iPhone instead of buying this screen.
Yeah. They get some watered down version or implementation of the same kind of thing. Do you think we're going to see any new IPs at E3 this year? Because I think that Nintendo really needs to bring out a new IP that really demonstrates why the gamepad is a good idea.
Do you think Nintendo will ever do a new IP? I don't.
Ever?
When was the last time they did one?
What about Project Hammer, which never actually came out?
Well, exactly.
Yeah. I don't think they will. I think we might see a third-party game that we don't know about that uses a gamepad in a cool way. Not first-party developed by Nintendo. I think you're right. I don't think we will. I think Nintendo are too set in their way. Look at us. We'll use our first-party IP to show off the console.
Yeah.
I don't think they're gonna change this year. I just can't see that happening.
Yep. So we'll have a new Mario, a new Mario Kart, a new Smash Brothers.
Yeah.
What else? Mention of the new Zelda, mention of a Metroid, maybe a teaser.
Yeah, maybe bring something back like an F-Zero, one of their franchises that hasn't been out for a while.
I don't think they'll do that because they'll use Mario Kart instead. I mean, the F-Zero team's long gone, so... I mean, the one on the GameCube was absolutely smashing that game.
That's great.
They're so fast. But yeah, that's long gone.
So... I would be interested to see if there's any new IP. I don't think we will. I think we'll see some third-party support that we didn't know about beforehand. I think Nintendo really, really has to pull their finger out and go to the third parties and say, look, come on, we will incentivize you to develop for our platform. Because what incentive do third parties have? And it's the same situation that Nintendo consoles always get in, where Nintendo come out, announce the console and say, oh, look, we are really pushing for it this time. Third party support is coming. Look, oh my God, we have Bayonetta. We have the wonderful 101. Isn't this amazing? We've got all this third party support. But then you don't get the big titles. Like, you don't get the Grand Theft Autos. You don't get the Call of Duty. Well, you do get the Call of Duty's, but watered down versions.
Well, I don't think they're doing the next one, are they?
No, I don't believe so.
I don't think Call of Duty COD Dogs, whatever it's going to come out, isn't it?
Yeah, you don't. And when you do get things like that, then the Wii U kind of becomes, for the mass market, not necessarily for myself, because I buy a Wii U, I buy a Nintendo console for the Nintendo games. But the mass market view it as a second console.
Yep.
And the Wii had that thing of being the party console, the accessible console, the console that your nana could play.
It had a reason to be the second console.
Yeah, exactly. And the Wii U doesn't have that. So I think Nintendo this year's E3 really need to show something. I can see them focusing on their core, which are their core franchises. Yes, they'll talk about them and everyone will get excited and they'll look maybe quite interesting. They might do something new. Hopefully they'll do something new with those franchises. But I think they really need something else. They need, like we talked about before, they need a Wii Sports or something that really demonstrates the reason why
nothing,
you should
though,
have
is there?
The console.
They can't do it with that pad.
Yeah, I can't imagine it, but it's up to Nintendo. The challenge is there for Nintendo to come up with it.
Super Mario Galaxy was on the Wii was absolutely such a good 3D platformer. No one could do 3D platformers like Nintendo can.
Yeah,
but will that really make me buy another console? No, I don't think it will. I mean, I've got my PC. I'm going to get an Xbox One or a PS4, depending on how E3 pans out, and then all the information that gets leaked before then and release.
Yeah.
But I'm not... I think I'd rather buy a 3DS.
Yeah, and same here. And I actually did purchase a second-hand 3DS recently, and it's great. It's got a library of great games on it at the moment.
Aren't they doing like a buy three, get your fourth for free or something?
Yeah, they're doing quite a few promotions like that. Not as good as Steam sales, but none of the big three console manufacturers' sales are ever as good as Steam sales at the moment. But yeah, the 3DS has an interesting lineup of software at the moment. Do you think we'll see lots of 3DS games at this year's E3, or do you think Nintendo will focus on the Wii?
No, I think they understand that the 3DS, if they can keep the 3DS big and dominate the handheld market, which it is doing, you know, because it's pretty much down to that and the Vita now, and 3DS is definitely doing better, although it got off to a rocky start itself, I think that's where they're going to focus. There'll definitely be a lot of mention. It could be an even split, to be fair.
Do you think we'll get a redesigned 3DS, the next version? Because obviously Nintendo iteratively redesigns their handhelds quite a lot.
Yeah, they did it quite a lot, haven't they? The DS, yeah. DSi, DS Lite, and then they've done the 3DS, the 3DS, and 3DS XL. I think they'll give it another year.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think Wii U will be the focus this year. 3DS will obviously get a mention, and they'll talk about quite a few games. Obviously, they've got the new Zelda game coming to the 3DS.
Yeah, they have, yeah. Is that the remake or sequel or something?
It's kind of a semi-sequel to Link to the Past. I'm not really clear on it. I've heard they're using the same map, or I've seen pictures that indicate they're using the same map as A Link to the Past. Mm-hmm. But supposedly it's not the same game. It is a sequel with different features and different gameplay mechanics. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. That will probably be the flagship title for the 3DS at their E3 presentation.
I think more people are likely to buy. Imagine if they came out with a 3D Mario platformer, like Mario Galaxy 3 for it. People would lap that
well,
up.
Well, Super Mario 3D Land that they brought out for it was a great Mario platformer. I got that. That was brilliant. Far better than most of the 2D side-scrolling Marios that come out these days. And that it wasn't quite Galaxy levels of brilliant, I would say, but it was kind of a mix between Galaxy and Super Mario 64, which was cool. It was a really good game.
Sounds great.
Yeah. So it will be interesting to see whether the 3DS actually gets some new IPs themselves. They get more Nintendo franchises. I don't know, but I think you're right. I think the focus will be firmly on the Wii U for Nintendo at this year's show.
They're going to give people what they want.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how their streaming of the Nintendo Direct pans out as opposed to the other guys' press conferences. Because obviously, it must be cheaper for Nintendo just to produce a Nintendo Direct, and they don't have the potential for things to go wrong. Remember, there was a famous press conference where Miyamoto was trying to show the one-to-one sword movements in Skyward Sword, and they didn't work, even though they actually worked quite well in the final game.
I remember the original version of Zelda on the GameCube before they totally scrapped it like they do, and they were doing the initial presentation and it glitched, so when he beat the first character they were supposed to drop a key, but he dropped a key into the wall and it glitched, so they just had to start talking about the game without showing it, so they don't have a lot of luck with Zelda games.
Exactly. And so it kind of makes sense for Nintendo to do this, because they can control how the information is talked about, how things go at the presentations, the flow of things. They control it, they can perfect the flow of their presentation, and Nintendo Directs are usually quite good from the ones I've seen. They are quite direct and they're quite quirky and quite funny as well, in that way that Nintendo quite often is. I don't imagine you'd see the CEOs of any of the other hardware manufacturers wearing green Luigi hats whilst making their announcements. So I think Nintendo could potentially get a lot of press by going this quiet, like kind of quiet underdog route they're going at the moment. Yeah, yeah. And I think a lot of the games press still has a lot of enthusiasm for those core Nintendo franchises if they're sure they're doing something new with those Nintendo franchises.
People talk about people, you know, companies that are game develop. You know, Sony wants to make a games console, but Sony is a massive, you know, electronic company. And although Nintendo didn't start its roots in video games, it was one of the first people to jump into the, you know, the home console market. So people have a lot of it's not even nostalgia, it's just they've grown up with it, they're still there. And if the idea of Nintendo not being around is a bit worrying, if it ever happened. I don't think it ever will, because if anything, they'll downsize to 3DS, but people want them to turn around and do something great.
Nintendo have enough money to survive a few crappy consoles that don't really do very well. So looking forward to Wii U announcements. Hopefully we'll get some interesting stuff. Hopefully we'll get some new IPs. Not entirely sure. Hopefully they'll announce that they're going to sort out their operating system and improve the load times, because they are still diabolical even after the update. But that's a minor feature to talk about. So there are our Nintendo predictions. Let's talk about some of the third parties: Ubisoft, EA, Activision, Capcom. What are the big things that you think we're going to see from these games? I think we're going to see lots of them focusing on next-gen consoles, not the Wii U. I think they're going to focus on next-gen consoles, but I think most of their games will be crossover between current-gen and next-gen, like we're going to see with Watch Dogs.
We're going to get 2 years of cross-gen 2 years? I think it's going to be the longest cross-gen we've ever had.
Really? Yeah. Okay.
Because of the amount of people that own PS3 and PS3s and 360s, companies, and the amount the games cost to make, companies will not risk, especially in the first year, just going solo onto one console like they've done in the past. You know, there's always been such a big... And if you get the general mood, a lot of people seem quite hesitant about this next gen. Usually people are really excited, but it seems to be this air of, is it actually going to work? Or is the thing just going to collapse in on itself? Right. And things just get more expensive. So yeah, a lot of cross-gen, everything running on really high-end PCs. We're talking like £3,000 rigs. To everything to be ramped up to the high. You know, Battlefield 4 will be on ultra, which I don't think it's going to be on PS. You know, that's what I'm going to be interested to see. A lot of people talking about the PS4 and the Xbox One and the technical side, but I'd be interested to see if Battlefield 4 runs on all high settings, you know, 100, you know, 60 frames a second, all high settings. I mean, you won't be able to see the settings like you can on PC because it's already locked down, but whether they come out and say, you know, the PC one is still going to be the best looking already. I think
it's inevitable that the very, very high-end PC version is the superior version.
It should be as well for the cost of own. I mean, your PS4 or something is going to cost £300-£400. You know, your PC rig is going to cost £3,000, so it should look better.
The performance to cost ratio that you're getting is obviously far better to get a PS4.
Exactly. Right? Yeah.
I mean, I think it's interesting. Lots of people have talked about how great Sony's decisions are in terms of the architecture of the actual internals of the machine and in terms of its graphical processing power. And I'm not technically minded enough to tell you whether PS4 titles are going to look quite as good as really high-end PC titles. But I will say that the Killzone demo that we saw looked pretty much just as good as anything that I've seen being played on the high-end PCs these days. I'm sure it didn't have quite as many polygons as maybe Crysis 3 did on ultra ridiculous settings high-end PCs, but it looked great. It looked really
there
good.
There is a trick to that on which was quite clever on the Killzone demo, which is the first minute and a half. It's all open city. Everything's amazing, but as soon as you land and you pull out the iron sight, if you look, all the walls are just covered in smoke and you can't actually see anything anymore. So it just downsizes everything. But yeah, it did look great. And that was on an early spec of the machine. I mean, I still think it's going to play like every other first-person shooter and be a bit dull.
But it is,
graphic could be fine. So EA, Battlefield 4. Now, I wonder where that'll go. There's got to be an exclusive content or something on either console.
Yeah,
I really think the PS4 should consider trying to step in, because if Microsoft say, oh yeah, Battlefield 4, we've got an exclusive with them, and it's that only on Xbox One can you have 64 versus 64 player maps on our cloud server diddly tank thing, whatever it is that they keep growing, but there's going to be something like that. But I suppose you can't big up COD for Xbox One and then big up Battlefield 4 at the same time.
No,
that wouldn't really work. So I wonder whether it's exclusive.
It wouldn't make sense for EA to go along with Microsoft if Microsoft are saying, "Yeah, we're getting the exclusive content for COD. We're going to massively push in terms of advertising. COD is on our console." It wouldn't make sense for EA to say, "Well, you can have Battlefield as well. We'll give you the exclusive content," because Battlefield will play second fiddle to COD.
Yeah.
Because as popular of a franchise as it is, it's not quite as popular as COD is. So I could see Battlefield 4 being PlayStation 4's military shooter, and it makes financial sense for PS4 to lock that down because it's still a big franchise.
Do you think they'll throw it at the Sony thing, or no? EA has got a massive store, hasn't it? It'll show it its own thing.
I think in terms of the war of the big shooters, I think Destiny will be at Sony's conference and not Microsoft's.
Microsoft will have Titan, Sony shooter, which is sounding quite similar to how Destiny wants to work, with kind of jumping co-op and kind of this kind of online-only world with semi-mission stuff.
Yeah. So I think that's the case in terms of the War of the Big Shooters and making money off them. Great. But let's talk about some other third-party titles. Obviously, we know things like Watch Dogs. We know The Witcher 3.
I reckon that'll be shown, definitely.
I could see
that being on the Xbox One exclusive list.
Yeah, definitely.
Did The Witcher 2 even come to PS3?
I don't know.
I don't think it did. I could be wrong there, but my gut reaction is telling me that the port was only to the Xbox.
Okay.
So that could be one.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see if Microsoft and Sony secure something like The Witcher 3 as a timed exclusive. One of these big third-party franchises that really has a core audience. I mean, we talked about this last time on the podcast. I think we could see that. But what I'm interested about here is what new games you think we're going to see from third-party publishers. Just, we know about things like The Witcher, we know about Thief. There's quite a lot of big games.
The reason I keep saying bringing it back to these is I don't know why any company would release a new IP without getting it onto one of those Sony or Microsoft stages. Like, if Activision or EA on their own stage said, here's a brand new IP we've never talked about, and it's not linked to either console company. It would have half the impact of if they announced it at the same time as an exclusive partnership and came out with one of, you know, not like Sony presented it and said, this is our game. Like, you know, at these conferences where somebody from EA walks out and says, you know, we've partnered with Sony to do this, or we've partnered with Microsoft to bring Mirror's Edge 2 to Kinect, or something like that. I mean, and Ubisoft will be all the stuff we already know, so it'll be the yearly Assassin's Creed game. There'll be Watch Dogs.
I think Ubisoft are normally quite good at coming out with something new. I think Watch Dogs is there something new, actually, at this point. So I'm not sure if they'll have anything.
They might have done, but they just got rid of that guy again, didn't they? He originally created Assassin's Creed, and there's that title.
Patrice? Yeah, they got rid of Patrice, and it doesn't sound like it was a very amicable departure.
They've basically taken this game off him and said, legally, we're going to hold on to this, and there's nothing you can do about it. So I think that'll be in limbo, so that probably won't get shown. But let's go. What's the Far Cry 3 team doing?
That's true. Yeah, what are they on now? Obviously, we know that Splinter Cell's coming.
Looks
quite interesting.
There's a lot of hype about the multiplayer in that. I never played it, but apparently they brought an old mode back.
It might have been the Pandora Tomorrow multiplayer component. I can't remember if it was Pandora Tomorrow or Chaos Theory. But it was a really cool multiplayer mode where it was spies versus mercenaries.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, so it's one of those cool multiplayer modes where the two different teams are playing different roles, like they have different abilities, and it worked really well. It was very well balanced. So yeah, it's cool seeing that coming back. So they're the staple Ubisoft franchises. Obviously, we've seen Watch Dogs is coming, and we've seen quite a lot of that by now, I feel. Watch Dogs feels like quite a known quantity.
Feels like it should have been out by now.
It does, yeah. I think they announced it quite early.
Yeah, they did. It must have been 2 years ago, E3, didn't they announce it?
It wasn't two years. It was last year. I'm pretty sure it was just last year at E3. Yeah.
Feels like a long time. Maybe it's because every time they bring it out of a new video, it's just saturation.
Yeah, something else that Ubisoft could potentially push, and I'm really hoping they do, is Beyond Good and Evil 2, which I think might have been announced 2 years, maybe 3 years ago at E3 now, and we've heard nothing of it since. I really, really love Beyond Good and Evil 1, absolutely amazing game. So underrated, so underappreciated, one of the best games of that generation. So I really hope that Beyond Good and Evil 2 is coming for the next generation. I don't care if it's this generation, just... get Michael Ancel working on that, give him the money. He's got the ideas, surely, because he's already started the project. Bring it to fruition. I want to see it. That's my pie-in-the-sky dream for E3 2013.
It would also be good if contrary to what I think will happen, is if a lot of games, new IPs, do get announced and they're not exclusives, because the problem with exclusives is somebody, you know, half of us miss out somewhere. Last of Us, if it was an exclusive, then... I should be able to get to play it when it comes out. And so it's nice it helps you at the beginning buy a console. It almost helps make the choice sometimes, because you might just go, right, it's got two games I really want. Yeah. But as you go down the line and you start to think, you know, there's five games here I really want to play and I can't. Mm-hmm. And it gets a bit strange. It's not like, you know, if you go to a shop and you're going to buy a Samsung or a Sony Blu-ray player and it's going to limit the amount of Blu-rays you can play.
Yeah. So, are there any other third-party games or potential third-party games that you're really excited about seeing at E3 this year?
I don't think so, because I don't know what they are yet. Because this generation's gone on so long, I think that people have been sitting on games for the past year or two in secret, just waiting for the time to go, right, here we go at last, you know.
Just get it out there before it ends.
Yeah, I think... And now the new generation's come along, there's a new push, they're probably going to think, right, this is a good time to start releasing this stuff, and it is the best time to do new IPs. I think in the indie scene, and I really hope that they don't just get washed away in the sea of new console excitement.
Yeah.
But I think that's where you'll see some interesting stuff.
Definitely. I hope that independently developed games, and not even just independently developed games, smaller games, medium-sized games, a whole spread of games. I hope that games are more diverse this year at E3. I don't think necessarily E3 is the show for that. You see things like GDC where they have more of a diverse representation, and really the main focus seems to have been transferring over to independent games and more creative games and smaller games that are taking bigger risks and bigger ideas and pushing new things. So I hope we see some of that bleed into E3, because I think E3 has the potential to mix everything together, to have these really big experiences, the ridiculously huge populated massively multiplayer online games for the next gen consoles that we might possibly see, as well as the small games created by one person about a really personal theme. I hope we see the full spread at E3 this year. I think you might be right in the sense that the big announcements are really going to be so big this year that they might take all of the press coverage away from the smaller games, but I really hope that we see gaming as a more diverse medium.
I don't think that's ever... It's going to happen in the bigger scale, but to most people, it's going to be, again, like, everyone knows what Transformers is and Michael Bay, but no one knows who Michael Haneke is. Within general speaking of cinema terms, if people go to the cinema, it's like people that... what's Transformers? Call of Duty is our equivalent, so people don't know who all the other people, all the indie developers are. And I think all you need is just more people to get involved in the indie scene as they get put off by the bigger titles, and to start funding them and just making sure that they keep running. The other thing I want to mention before, as we sort of wrap up, is The Evil Within. It's definitely a third party title that I am very interested in.
Same here. It looks, from what we've seen, it looks like it could be a really brilliant survival horror game with the emphasis on horror, not on action, as lots of big budget survival horrors seem to
be. Well, they're not even survival horror, most of them, but I know what you mean.
They're action games, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm really...
super excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
Other games that I'm really excited about seeing more of, I would say Thief. I'm really excited to see that. I recently got all the old Thief games in a pretty awesome Steam sale, and I've been checking those out, and they're super interesting. Very old now. It's kind of the situation where you go back to one of these old games that was really great for its time, but when you're going back to them and retrospectively looking at them, it's kind of harder to get into them because you've played the games that they inspired and that have iteratively improved upon them. But I can appreciate why the Thief games are so great, and I think Thief has the potential to be really good. It looks like it's taken a lot of cues from Dishonored and what Dishonored did.
I hope it doesn't go too far with that, because Dishonored was like a stealth light version of Thief from memory. I mean, I'm sure from memory the stealth was much more important in Thief than it was in that. So I hope they don't.
Yeah, it seems to be.
They don't lean more towards Dishonored, and they try and keep the idea of Thief where it was bigger, more open levels. Dishonored had that, but I mean in the sense that you can't just blink away from everything. It was just having your little blackjack thing and waiting until the guard comes past and smashing him on the back of the head.
Yeah.
And having a bow and arrow, and it wasn't a case of, if things go wrong, you can just blink across a map.
Yeah, here's your get out of jail free card. Yeah, I hope we see some interesting stuff from Thief. And probably my most anticipated game at the moment, Dark Souls 2.
Yes, is that going to be there?
Oh, surely it will be there,
Oh, yeah, no, they're pushing it big time, aren't they?
I think Dark Souls 2 will be pushed big time. I'm a little bit worried with the approach that the developers are taking.
Yes.
They're pumping a lot of money, a lot more money into it this time, because they see this as something... Obviously, like, Demon's Souls was a bit of a bet. It had some success, niche success, but it had some success, which allowed them to fund Dark Souls 2, which had a wider success. It appealed to a lot more people.
It was a big success because it had a sensible budget for what they were attempting to do. It was an A game, not a triple A game, and that's what it was.
Exactly,
and now they're trying to go into a double A game sort of territory where they're trying to mass market it more. They're expecting more sales, and I think they're setting themselves up to fall on that. That's not to say the quality will be worse of the game. I mean, I think it is going to lose some of its charm as they try to explain more and other things, but I think it's... the people that play it, you've got their market now, and you want to build on that. You don't want to try and widen it straight away. You know, it's not even like they've done one more game and thought, right, we've done Dark Souls 2 now, let's do something else. It's like, right, we've had one successful game. Before anyone can take a breather, let's widen the market on the next one. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm worried that it's been seen as something that can be milked now. Because it's been popular, it's been a success. I'm worried that they think that they can just drain it for all it's worth whilst it's popular, and it will lose what made it so special in the first place. Yep. Because Dark Souls, it didn't need, the next Dark Souls didn't need that much of a bigger budget. It needed to be a very similar kind of game, but just with some new ideas.
It's interesting when
some reworked ideas.
When you said before about indie games being personal stories, and if you read about the creative director for Dark Souls, that was almost a personal story, because when he used to read Western books and images of Greek lore and legend and myth and all that stuff, he couldn't read the words or the stories, so he had to make them up based on the images, which is why in Dark Souls it's all imagery, and it's like this weird land where you know, if people were walking around talking another language, it wouldn't feel weird because it feels alien. And I think this new one, they're just totally scrapping that idea.
I don't know. I don't think we can say that yet based upon what we've seen, because it's still very Dark Souls.
They said they're going to explain stuff and there's going to be more of a story.
See, they've said that. It'll be interesting to see how far they go down that road, because that was really one of the things that made Dark Souls special in the first place. The fact that it was so unclear, it was so cloudy, it was so distant in tone. It really wasn't that much of an accessible game, but that was what made it special in an era when so many games were all about hand-holding it and being accessible. Yeah, I've said that many times actually about the game. It was more of a survival horror game than any of the other classically survival horror franchises I've played recently. Dead Space, Resident Evil, whatever.
I think it's the closest thing to Resident Evil since Resident Evil. And that's sort of the same eerie tone.
There's definitely something about the feeling of the game, and that's why it's a special franchise to me. I talk about it all the time on this podcast. I should probably stop.
Nope, keep going.
But that's probably my most anticipated game for this year's E3. Unless Sony come out and say, Last Guardian's here, it's a PS4 launch title, in which case I will go out and pre-order.
No, surely that's just going to be one of those games that never actually happens.
Do you think?
It's just
God.
If they don't announce it at this E3, possibly. I mean, this is really... Didn't people buy a PS3 for that game?
Well, yeah, me partially.
It's bloody madness.
It is ridiculous. Like, it's going to get to the stage where Team Ico, one of Sony's best first party developers, haven't released a game on one of their consoles.
They must be spending a fortune on that game.
So I don't know. They're a brilliant studio, but obviously a troubled studio as well.
This is why
they have said they're still working on it, so I've still got hope.
This is why you hear so much about games not making enough money and bad budget. It's all bad project planning and budgeting. You can't just design a game for 8 years and then go and then expect it to do really well, because it's never going to do that well. It's crazy.
Well, I think it was... I don't know. I haven't got insider information, but I imagine it was probably the case where they had a vision. They tried
Didn't
to
they scrap it?
Vision was too ambitious. They thought of some other stuff, and it's just had a very troubled life cycle. Mm-hmm. But it would be interesting to see whether it goes the way of Duke Nukem or whether it blossoms into beautiful flower.
You know what? Really interesting. I bet there is one or two nearly playable versions and builds of that game that have then been scrapped. Yeah. Where some people in the studios have actually sat down and played through half of one of the versions before they scrapped it.
And when the game gets released, Polygon will probably have quite an interesting article about those versions and some videos of those versions.
It's like Resident Evil 4, the original version of that, if you've ever looked at that.
Yeah,
it's totally
different.
That's pretty
look
much
what
finished.
Happened there. So I hope it's more Resident Evil 4 than Duke Nukem, but we'll see whether it's announced. Just one final game we'll talk about before we wrap things up. Could potentially be the biggest third party, or might not even end up being third party on any of the big consoles game if it was announced at E3 this year. And that is Half-Life 3.
Do you really think it's going to get announced?
No.
Do you think they're ever even going to make it?
Yes.
Oh, confident.
Of course they're going to make it. They're working on something. They've got to be. They never released Episode 3 of Half-Life 2.
Well, they got an economist in, and now they just sit around looking at spreadsheets and laptops going,
no.
How can we make loads of money by doing nothing? Trading cards. Brilliant.
Virtual trading cards for Steam.
How can you make Steam?
Let's milk those suckers for all
they're
worth.
How can Steam some sort of its own? It'll have Bitcoin introduced soon, and just have its own marketplace, its own sort of money, and it'll just.
Yeah, but I think if Half-Life 3 was announced, then it could steal a lot of the headlines at the show, obviously, because Half-Life is such a big franchise, and they've been so quiet. They haven't even said, oh yeah, we're working on something, we've got something down the line. They've been so quiet on what they're doing with regards to the Half-Life franchise.
Do you think they've even started it?
Of course they have. Do you seriously think they haven't started it?
I don't know.
They must have.
I think after episode 2, they got to a point of steam where Gabe and everyone's attention just started to move to other things.
But I think everyone has this impression that Valve are just hippies at heart and it's really an awesome place. I think to a certain extent they are, but yes, they are businessmen as well, and they are figuring out how to make money. But I think that they still want to make great creative games. We saw Portal, we saw Portal 2. Mm-hmm. They've got the
franchise. That's where they kind of excelled, is by stepping back and away from Half-Life and letting that stuff happen. Yeah. But then again, I don't know if they've got any other games coming out now, because Portal's done its thing. Left 4 Dead 3? There could be a next-gen game.
Oh, God, no. you're right, it could very well
be a next-gen
game.
I think that's more likely to be announced.
Do you really? Than Half-Life 3?
Yeah.
No. I think it's time.
That new Titans on the Source engine has been edited, so maybe there's a... Maybe it's a new version, because Half-Life always comes with a new Source, doesn't it?
Exactly, yeah. I think with next-gen, I think really what Valve have been waiting for is a way to evolve the Half-Life franchise into something more than it was. Mm-hmm. A way to have a next step. Like there was a step between what Half-Life 1 was able to do and what Half-Life 2 was able to do. If you look at like the facial animations, the character acting, the physics, they're really, really, they were really pioneers with the way that they use physics in that game. And I think they're waiting until they've got more powerful hardware or whatever, so they can take a number of steps that really set Half-Life 3 apart from Half-Life 2. I don't think Valve were ever under pressure to get Half-Life 3 out there, because you know it's been a long time since Half-Life 2. I think Valve as a company and as a creative company were waiting for that next step in technology that would really facilitate their next Source engine, which they could really show off with the next Half-Life.
I think it could happen though. This E3 though.
I almost know, because Valve generally don't.
No, let's
go
on it. Let's just say it. Yeah, they're going to announce it.
Shane's saying, yeah, I'm saying no. I don't think it will happen at this year's E3. I think Valve will have their own show where they announce it. Because they're so important these days, and they're a big platform holder in a sense. Okay, so any more predictions, Shane, before we wrap this up?
I don't think so. I think we've covered pretty much everything.
Yeah. So there are E3 predictions for 2013.
Oh, Capcom, Resident Evil 7.
All right, next gen?
Oh, yeah, something like that. There'll be 74 characters and more backflips. And more guns and more stuff no one cares about.
And more QTEs.
It will just be a quick time event.
More absolutely annoying QTEs in pointless places. But yeah, I think that's probably quite a good prediction, Shane. Next gen, and I think I won't be that interested in it.
I do not give a shit.
Evil Within.
Yes, that's the one. Definitely.
Deadly Premonition 2, you're not going for that?
No, no one's going to fund that. Hardly anyone funded the first one.
Well, the game did get a director's cut, so... Yeah.
If that was announced as an exclusive for either console, that'd be my choice done.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That would sell you.
Yep.
So that's kind of the situation that I'm in with Beyond Good and Evil 2 or Half-Life 3, something like that.
So yeah, in fact, then we could finish on that. What would be the sort of exclusive announcements that would make the decision for you then?
Those games, really. The games that I really want to see, well, first and foremost, it would probably be new IPs that look really refreshing and exciting, and maybe if you get some really exciting indie developers. I mean, the fact that PS4 has Jonathan Blow's The Witness on there.
Yep.
That really excites me, and that's really swaying me towards PlayStation at the moment. I haven't seen anything like that from Xbox. Halo 5, Gears of War, bloody blah.
Man,
brilliant.
I'm done with those now.
It's not really floating my boat. New IPs, and then in terms of franchises that I would like to see more games of, Beyond Good and Evil 2, like I said before, Half-Life 3, if any of the actual console holders manage to get something exclusive there, which I can't see that happening, but yeah, if they did. I'm trying to think of what else. If there was a new Dungeon Keeper. I've been waiting for a new Dungeon Keeper for a long time.
I've been getting some weird... there's a gap in what I'm kind of playing at the moment, and I feel like I need something that's almost like that.
A strategy.
Oh, yeah, something like Settlers, or there's something. I can't tell what it is, but I've got some sort of invisible...
You've got a craving.
Yeah, there's something I need, and I keep looking at Steam sometimes just thinking, what is it that I really want to play, and I have no idea. But maybe it's something like that. But again, consoles, it's not really a place you're going to get those.
That's true.
The thing that might get me is if somebody does something new, and when we say new, I just think that with the genres, they've become so kind of stifled within that market is, you know, first-person shooters. Yeah. Everyone walks around with looking like that, you know, the wrist is stitched to the temple on the head holding the gun, like they've not got any proper length arms or anything. And so it makes them all look the same. When you go back to the darkness and you've got the outstretched arms, it's even things like that, where somebody's actually obviously sat back and gone, wait a minute, this just looks stupid. But everyone's doing it all the time. Why don't we just take the step back and make this look a little bit more realistic?
Yeah, yeah. So let's finish on that. What would you like to see next-gen games do different to the current gen? I will say ways of interaction. And
yes,
we talk about,
massively.
I'm actually writing something about this at the moment. We talk about photorealism all the time, how photorealism is a great, but it's superfluous. What I really want to see is something to do with the way that we interact with games being different and the themes that games take on and the genres. Let's not just focus entirely on first-person shooters, third-person shooters, and whatever else, and bloody zombie games and fantasy action RPGs. There are so many other things that games could be doing, and this is why independent...
Yeah, no zombie games anymore, for fuck's sake. Done with it.
An interesting zombie game, something that does something different. I'm quite interested to check out the DayZ game when it actually comes out, because I never actually checked out the DayZ mod at the time. Just new ways of interaction and new topics that games explore. That's what I'm really excited about in the next gen. I don't think we'll see it that much, but I think we'll see independent development really giving that, because in terms of that kind of stuff, PC and independent development is where that's at the moment. That's really the treasure trove of those kind of games, so I really hope that the console manufacturers take that on board. So what are you most excited about in terms of next gen games?
I want more reactive design to characters. Yep. So when Darkness, for example, like we said before, is a brilliant and condemned, brilliant example of when the first fear as well, if this is mainly first person games, but third can be the same, is when they're appearing to interact, not by pressing a button, but when they walk up to a desk, they will stop or put a hand or lean on the wall, or their arms, when you're first person, you actually look down and you can see the whole arm rather than just looking like, you know, some weird shaped creature. And when you look down, you can see your legs, but when you step onto stuff, you actually step onto stuff, and that sort of complete interaction with the world is something that would be more impressive. Because especially, I was listening to a film podcast today, and they talk about in film, like academic writing, how black and white cinema is seen to complement people better and architecture better because it doesn't look like real life, and therefore it has this, you know, this kind of magical edge to it. They kind of go into the theory behind it all, and it interests me that games are trying to become more like real life, which are therefore more boring. When we should be trying to, when games, video games
should be becoming abstract.
Yeah, video games can do anything they want. It could be anything. Yeah. So let's make it as realistic as possible. It's like, well, just drive a car. I mean, you can say, oh, well, you can't drive every car, but you see, no, it's, you want something a bit more exciting. When you get films that are coming out that are more adventurous and they have limitations, and video games are just really dull in that respect. It's like, I want to see somebody, you know, but again, it's the indie space doing a lot of this stuff. You know, just going absolutely, just this key, kind of having this key idea and just running with it. And what with the indie scene, what I want to happen is, I like films, I don't want films, you know, a lot of films are made, except for the Hollywood ones, to not be franchises. It's a story, it's told, it's done. And I want more games to be like that. I don't want them built so that they hope there's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 more. I want a complete story from beginning to end, and a way to do that is for engines to get cheaper so that indie games don't look like indie games as much.
Yeah, yeah. This is the argument that I think we always come back to on this podcast. It's the discussion between games as a business and games as an art form.
Yeah.
And really, next gen, all I really hope is that they facilitate games as an art form more so than they do at the moment, mm-hmm. those next-gen consoles. Because the consoles at the moment are mainly about games as a business, which isn't a bad thing. You can still get very creative, very interesting games that have very interesting systems of interaction and really well made, and they're made by creative people. That's great. But support games as an artistic form of expression and exploration.
That's how you're going to survive another gen.
Yep.
Yep.
That's how we can really differentiate ourselves as an industry. Okay, so that's it. We'll wrap up just after that little rant about what we want from next-gen games.
Mm-hmm.
We will have two Thunderbolters on the floor at E3 2013. Philip Morton is going. And who else is it, Shane? Is it Nick?
It's Nick.
Yep. So we'll have those two guys on the floor. They will be posting hands-on previews and whatever the hell else they want to post from E3 2013, so look out for that coverage. And also, we will be posting stuff from back home. Hope everyone enjoys E3 2013. That's it for episode 23. Oh, God. That's it for episode 23. If you want to let us know what you are most excited about for E3 2013 or what you think of our silly, ridiculous predictions here, head on over to thunderboltgames.com and check out the forums, or alternatively, contact us on Twitter @_Thunderbolt or email us at podcast@thunderboltgames.com. From me, it's goodbye, and from Shane,
goodbye.